Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Kimi, Somewhere with No Bridges, and Death on the Nile. Hi, David. Does the Nile have bridges?
The Nile, I suppose it has bridges.
It must, right?
It's
long.
I don't think they play any big part in the movie, which is mainly about a boat going down the river and people hopping off at various times to engage in various touristy kind of activities. But yes, we do have a little bit of a water theme going today, except for our first film, which is Kimi, which doesn't really have much in the way of water in it at all. And this is the new film by Steven Soderbergh, a tremendously talented and gifted and important and prolific filmmaker who a number of years ago retired from filmmaking. Just like Ingmar Bergman before him, it turned out to be a sort of a phony retirement because he keeps right on making movies, except now he just makes them. Well, Bergman made them for television, and Soderbergh makes them for various different platforms, most effectively in recent years, HBO. And in fact, Kimi is a new film. It just came out on HBO, and it's just like Soderbergh's theatrical films, except that it was made for the internet, and it goes very nicely over the streaming platform. It plays very well. It's a very effective movie, and in fact, it's all about the internet and the web and all that stuff, and as is the case with so many Steven Soderbergh movies, it is a thriller. So here is what Kimi is about. Kimi is one of these services where you can it's like one of these smart services like Alexa, that sort of thing, where you say what you want and then your speaker hears what you've said and obeys your commands. So you say, put on Taylor Swift, and sure enough, it obeys your command and puts on Taylor Swift. I'm not sure why anybody would particularly want that service, but hey, that's the way it goes in today's world. So we have Zoe Kravitz, who plays our main character and who is just in practically every single frame of this movie, almost. She plays our main character, who is named Angela Childs, and she works for the company that operates Kimi, and her job is to listen for things that are going a little wrong, commands that Kimi doesn't quite get right, commands that Kimi can't understand, and then she has to sort of rectify those sitting at her own computer. And of course, all this movie takes place during various COVID lockdowns. So the coronavirus is there. And so she never goes out. She stays indoors all the time working at her screen and being socially distanced from the whole rest of the world. There may also be other psychological reasons for her never going out and being so totally distanced from the rest of the world. She apparently has a traumatic incident, apparently a sexual assault in her own past. So she is willing to flirt with this young man who she sees across the street through his windows, and he flirts back and they text each other a little bit. But nothing seems to much come of that because, again, she seems to not only be kept indoors and away from everybody by the pandemic, but also she has this traumatic event in her past, which affects her behavior and her attitudes. So into all this now emerges a tremendous thriller aspect. Angela hears something which might be a violent crime that has been caught by one of the Kimi speakers. And she starts investigating this, and she starts putting it up on her computer and refining the sound and getting different dimensions of the file playing into her ears. And she hears more and more, and she begins to really believe that she has uncovered at least an assault and possibly a murder. So she has to report this to the company that operates Kimi. Well, that turns out to be very difficult because they are not eager to hear about this. This is the sort of thing they're supposed to be very alert to, and they claim to be very alert to. They're not going to allow something like this to happen, and if their platform has caught something like this, they're going to do something about it. But they're reluctant, and eventually Kimi, the only way she can get them to listen to her is by making an appointment with an executive at the company, which means she has to go out now and go and see that executive. So eventually in the movie she does exactly that, and then things go in all kinds of other directions, and this turns into a full-fledged thriller. So How About Kimi? Is it a good movie? It's a good movie. It's certainly not a great movie. It's a good movie. One thing about it is that it sort of reminds me of a lot of earlier movie, and that's okay. It has been compared with Alfred Hitchcock's great classic Rear Window, about a man who is incapacitated by a broken leg and spends a lot of time looking out the window of his apartment and begins to think that he has uncovered a murder that's taken place across the courtyard. And in a way, Kimi is sort of Rear Window plus the coronavirus pandemic. But it reminded me of some other movies too, like from the 1960s, such as Michelangelo Antonioni's great classic Blow Up, which is about a photographer who believes that his camera has accidentally uncovered evidence of a crime. And a movie that came out a little after that, Francis Ford Coppola's movie, The Conversation, which is about a sound recorder who believes that his sound recording has uncovered a crime. It reminded me of all of those movies. And that's okay. If you're familiar with those earlier films, it will give Kimi a little bit of extra resonance for you, a little extra stuff to have sort of fun thinking about as you watch the movie. I have to say there is one real weak point about Kimi, and that is the action scenes. There are some chase scenes in this movie, and oh, I just don't think they're well done. They're just not plausible. They're full of things like where you see somebody running around and running down a corner or running down a corridor and getting away from somebody. You say, but they couldn't have gotten away from that person. That person was much too close. And stuff like that. And you don't even have to be watching it with eagle eyes. If you're just sort of watching it, you sort of get disappointed in some of these action sequences. They seem to be carelessly done. But they provide a little bit of visual liveliness in the movie, which always threatens to become kind of static because we are looking at a lot of people's computer screens. And it's a well-done movie. Soderbergh really knows his craft and knows what he's doing, even when he's just sort of knocking off a generic thriller like this. So again, Kimi's not a great film, but it's a good movie, and it's good to know that Steven Soderbergh is still out there making the kinds of movies that he makes well, which is thrillers and movies with suspense and movies with mildly interesting characters, and he's just a good filmmaker, and I'm glad he's still on the job. Our second movie today, Jill, is called Somewhere with No Bridges, and this has just opened up on a number of streaming platforms, so it's sort of everywhere. One of the things that interests me about Somewhere with No Bridges, it's a very minor movie. It's almost a throwaway kind of a film, and I'm just interested that it's getting out there with a real profile, and you know, people can very easily find it if they want to see it. And again, it's a very nice movie, but it's a very minor movie. I'm not sure I will remember it for very long, but I thought it would be worth paying a little attention to it. Because little independent, extremely personal movies like this documentary are still being made, and every once in a while they're getting out, again, on enough platforms to really sort of make a little bit of an impact. And I just think that's a nice thing that's happening in this day and age when so many movies get lost entirely in the shuffle. Somewhere with No Bridges is a movie that, maybe it would be just as well if it did get lost in the shuffle, but I'm glad that attention is being paid to it by some people, and now that includes me. So let's talk about it for just a moment. It was made by a filmmaker named Charles Frank, who is a relative of the main character of the movie, who died a number of years ago. His name was Richie Medeiros. And we find out at the very beginning, the whole movie takes place on Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. That's the Somewhere with No Bridges. Apparently, it's the largest island in America, which is not connected to the mainland by a bridge. And Richie Medeiros was a person who earned his living by fishing, as so many of the people out there do, fishing, catching lobsters, stuff like that. And he died when he fell off the boat. And it was very tragic. And what this movie is just kind of a long ode to the memory of Richie Medeiros and what a wonderful person he was and how he had his flaws and he was kind of a rapscallion and he got into a bar fight and stuff like that. But he was a lovely person and everybody loved him and his family loved him and his friends love him. And we have a whole lot of interviews with those people. And basically we have this long kind of memorial to this guy who none of us have probably ever heard of before except the people in this movie, Richie Medeiros. And we find out what a lovely person he was. So again, why is this movie out there and why is it getting so much attention? It's a nice movie. That's all. It's just a nice movie. It's a movie which is full of love for this person who most of us never heard of and will probably never hear of again. And we have all of this sort of reverence for him. And so it's nice to know that there are people out there who are so beloved by their friends and family and that somebody would really care enough to make a film about somebody like this. And we do get a whole lot of really, really nice shots of Martha's Vineyard and the surroundings in which Richie Medeiros plied his trade and lived his life with his friends and family. And one of the things which I think is substantial about this movie is it's a good reminder of how really tied some people are to the places where they live, where they grew up, where they earn their livings and so forth. This movie is almost as much about Martha's Vineyard as it is about Richie Medeiros. And we really get a good sense of how rooted in that landscape, in that terrain, in that seascape, the various people who appear in the movie are. So again, Somewhere with No Bridges is a very minor film. It's a very little film. It is not a very memorable film, but I'm glad it's getting out there. It reminds us that that can happen. It's possible to make a really personal, heartfelt movie about a very minor subject that doesn't really matter to most people and have it get out there and get seen by a bunch of folks. And I just think it's nice to remember that that kind of filmmaking and that kind of film distribution still go on. Now, for something completely different, Jill, our last movie of the day, which is a very, very big, hugely major studio release, different from Kimi, which is a very little sort of an internet release, and different from Somewhere with No Bridges, which is a very little movie in all ways. Death on the Nile is a very, very big movie, starting with its great settings along the Nile River and moving to its very big name cast, headed by Kenneth Branagh, and also the fact that it's based on a very, very well-known novel by the legendary mystery writer Agatha Christie. Kenneth Branagh directed this movie, and it's kind of interesting with him. Way back early in his career, he went through, well, he was a very serious actor who had his early training on the stage, and way back earlier in his career, he went through a sort of a Shakespeare phase when he did Henry V and Hamlet and other movies like that. And now maybe he's sort of going through a little bit of an Agatha Christie phase, because even though he's made a whole lot of other movies, just recently he made a film of Murder on the Orient Express, another very popular Agatha Christie novel that came out in 2021. So now, just year later, here he is out with Murder on the Orient Express came out in 2017, a few years ago. Last year, he made a movie called Belfast, which he did not star in, which is unusual for him. And that was a very, very different kind of movie about the Irish Troubles. But again, I think he's going through a little bit of an Agatha Christie phase at the moment. Murder on the Orient Express in 2017, and now Death on the Nile in 2022. And the thing about making a movie out of a novel as well known as Death on the Nile is that you have to give people exactly what they want. You have to give people, audiences. You have to give audiences a bunch of passengers on a ship which is going down the Nile. This is back around the 1930s, and they get off from time to time, and they go to tourist spots, and they see this, and they see that. But murder takes place along the way, and the great detective, Hercule Poirot, the great French detective, has to solve this murder. And, of course, other murders take place, and all kinds of twists and turns take place, and the plot thickens and thins and thickens again. You have to give people that, and also throw in enough stuff to make be a little surprising, so that we're not simply seeing the movie reproduced. And by the way, there was an earlier film adaptation back in the 70s, directed by John Guillermin, which had a huge name cast, where Peter Ustinov played Poirot. So you also have to differentiate yourself from that movie. So you have to differentiate yourself from the Agatha Christie novel and also from the earlier big Hollywood movie, while still giving people what they expect out of this particular property. So the Branagh version of Death on the Nile does, in fact, differentiate itself in a number of ways. First of all, it starts out with a scene which is so different that I started to wonder if I had wandered into the wrong auditorium of the multiplex. It starts off with a World War I battle scene where we see the young Hercule Poirot saving his entire company through his brilliant insight and deduction, and also getting a scar on his face, which is why he later grows the mustache, which is one of the things that Hercule Poirot is famous as a character. So it really starts off very differently with this big World War I battle scene. There's nothing like that in the novel. Then from that, we go to another thing which is very usual, a long music scene, a nightclub scene, and a very good one, by the way, a real rhythm and bluesy scene with somebody singing a song and playing an electric guitar, which was a very, very new invention back in the 1930s. So we now have this music scene. So again, I started to think, ooh, am I in the right place? Well, yeah, there's Kenneth Branagh, and he appears to be playing Hercule Poirot, so I guess this is the right place. Then we get into the real story itself, which involves a bunch of people traveling down the Nile on a very luxurious boat. And we have Hercule Poirot, who is in the company, and again, murders take place, deaths take place, and eventually, by the end, he brings all the passengers together, and he solves the whole thing in a final scene of incredibly brilliant sleuthing. So, yes, Death on the Nile gives you exactly what you want if you're familiar with the novel, if you're familiar with the earlier film, or if you've never encountered those things at all. It gives you a nice, engaging murder mystery. It also does give you enough new twists, including, by the way, the ending, which is very much like the ending of the novel and the earlier film, but it's done in a different sort of a way, which I found actually very effective. So yes, it gives you what you want, and it gives you a little bit of new stuff as well. I'm not a big admirer of the whodunit genre. To me, they get very dry, where everybody's figuring out clues and trying to figure out what happened, and it's sort of too mathematical and precise for me. I like things that are more intuitive than that. But a lot of people love whodunits, and this is a good whodunit. So if you like whodunits, or if you even can put up with whodunits, you really enjoy Death on the Nile. And I should add that it's got a whole lot of fabulous locations in Egypt and around there. And so that's another big plus for this extremely photogenic movie. So that is my somewhat international story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you ever and always, international, national, regional, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Kimi, Somewhere with No Bridges, and Death on the Nile.